Hello, welcome to Clinicians Brief Partner Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Katie Berlin, and I'm thrilled to be joined today by our guest, Dr. Lindsay Starkey. Dr. Lindsay, welcome.
Hey, Katie. Thanks.
So in general practice, we talk about parasites on a daily basis, like multiple times a day, maybe multiple times in an hour some days. So it's probably, you know, we all have a certain knowledge base when it comes to parasites, but I think it's safe to say that Dr. Lindsay has spent a lot of time with parasites in her career. And so I'm really excited to get to talk to you today, thanks to our partners at Merck Animal Health, makers of Bravecto. From what I hear, Dr. Lindsay, you're really passionate about making sure veterinary teams and clients are well-informed and doing everything they can to protect their pets. Dr. Lindsay, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I kind of got interested in parasitology. Gosh, I hate to say it now because it's the number keeps going up every time I think about it. But it was probably close to 15 years ago when I took my first parasitology course. And it kind of intrigued me. I thought they could do fun, exciting things. But it was really in vet school. And my mentor there, Dr. Susan Little, who many of you have maybe met or attended a CE event from. But she really started my infatuation, I guess you call it, with ticks and vector-borne diseases and all sorts of parasites. So, you know, I went to vet school at Oklahoma State, did my residency training there, and took boards subsequently. And now I'm down in Auburn, Alabama. I love it down here. My family and I have been here almost 5 years now. So yeah, I love talking about parasites with anyone who will give me the time of day to talk about parasites. And that does include like random strangers sitting next to me on the airplane if they happen to look over at my computer screen.
It's their own fault then.
Yeah, see who started it. So
that's awesome. One of my favorite advisors and faculty members when I was in vet school was a parasitologist. She was led one of our tutor groups, and she was just an amazing person. And I feel like, you know, the concept of the parasitologist compared to the reality of who actually is working in parasitology. I mean, you guys are always so cool and fun and like, you know, you're really like fun, awesome people. And I just love that. Like, I just find that to be true the majority of the time, which I think is great.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I actually told my team here I want to get us all like matching shirts that say I love my crappy job.
Amazing.
The literal truth.
So this is, I'm going to just start off with my most hard-hitting question of the day. Do you have a favorite parasite?
I mean, are we allowed to say, like, I feel like we shouldn't show favoritism to certain parasites, right? Like, we should, they're all equal opportunity bugs and worms, but... I do really enjoy working with and learning about and educating on ticks. That's my favorite thing. But when it comes to like living in the world, like as soon as I see a tick on me when I'm out, like not working, intentionally trying to find them, if I'm just out recreating, I like lose my mind and get all itchy and scratchy. So like I'm a normal person in that regard. Like I don't like them on me or my pets either.
I'm glad you also don't like them out in the wild. That makes me feel better about.
I promise you I'm normal.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's dive in. You know, today we're talking about some of our oldest parasite friends, fleas and ticks, which is a timely topic. You know, it's springtime, warmer weather is finally coming, at least where I am. And I don't know about you, but I am a summer person. Like I suffer all winter for the reward of this weather. And I am perfectly fine when it's 95 degrees. I do not complain. I love the spring and summer. So what about for a parasitologist? Do you look at seasons any differently?
Yeah, I do actually. And so I'm not sure where you're at. I'm down here in Alabama. So it's like, you know, maybe we have a little bit of fall and a little bit of spring, and something that you could like air quote say is winter, but not really. So we're pretty much summer year round down here, but we still have seasonality when it comes to the things that I work with. Like some ticks prefer it when it's cooler. And down here, there are wintertime ticks, and they're the wintertime ticks, you know, across the Northern Hemisphere. It's just when it gets a little too cold, they do, you know, truly kind of go quiescent or dormant. But they'll emerge when it's, you know, 40 degrees outside. That's a nice-ish day for them. They'll start becoming active. Whereas other ticks are more like you, Katie. They want to wait until it's really nice and warm and consistently warm outside. And then they're going to be like, all right, let's do this. So yeah, as soon as the weather does start warming up at all, and just, I've had to retrain my mind, like, for the ticks, warm might be 40 degrees, whereas to, you know, most of us, we're still wearing a jacket and bundling up and, you know, that sort of thing. But I do see the seasons a little different. And I do say, you know, it's Ixodes season or it's Lone Star tick season. I don't think I really call them winter, spring, summer, fall anymore. I just say what season it is based on the ticks that are most active.
Well, that is definitely a different way to look at it. And I'm not sure if I like that better or not as much. So is there ever a real off season for ticks?
I would like to give people, you know, like this, make them feel a little bit better and say, yeah, but honestly, maybe not. And it truly is dependent on your geography. But for us down here, we rarely get too cold where the Ixodes are not, you know, out and about or not for any more than a few days in a row. And so we truly don't have much of an off season down here from ticks or fleas or mosquitoes or any of the ectos. But up north where there is significant snowfall and significant cold, which is, those are places I never want to live ever again. But the ticks do have to, you know, take a break then. So there might be a little bit of an off season, but it's so hard to predict. And none of us should really even try, like, because you're going to get this rogue few days in a row where it might like be legit 70 degrees in January, even in Michigan, you know, that we wouldn't think about that. So even if it's truly off season, every day in that season may not be an off day. And we just need to be cognizant of that and communicate that to our clientele that, you know, I know we're not really thinking about it being tick season, but as Dr. Starkey would say, it's Ixodes season if it's any season right now. So we do need to be vigilant.
I mean, I'm in Pennsylvania, so definitely, you know, Lyme Central up here, and it does get pretty chilly, but that is something that it's very hard to convince clients that, you know, even though we're cold and we're wearing jackets, like we do have those 40 degree days that pop up in stretches. So that's really good to know. I mean, not good, but good to be aware of.
Important to know. I don't.
Yeah, important to know that word.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about in areas that tend to be cold for a lot of the year? Like, is there any area that's really zero risk?
No. Yeah. Like, I think we would all just be living there, right?
Yeah. Well, maybe not me because the 95 degree thing. But yeah, I mean, it seems like it's pretty much something we all are sort of united by having to worry about. So what about other risks of the season, of warm weather? What other things change about the spring and summer that increase the risk of a vector-borne illness?
Yeah, so the vectors themselves are becoming more active, but so are their reservoir hosts that, you know, are potentially harboring these pathogens that we're worried about. Because it's not just the fleas and ticks that we're concerned about, like they're gross, you know, but it's all these other things that they can secondarily lead to. So all, like, everyone's activity, whether that's animal, vector, person, is kind of increased during the spring, summer, and fall months. And so just our, you know, going out where these wildlife and these vectors normally reside, you know, all of these things are colliding with each other to just increase, you know, potentially exponentially the risk that's associated with those activities.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's hard to keep me inside right now. And this is the weather that my dog likes the best, is when it gets super hot. He's a Chihuahua, so he likes it really hot. And then I always find ticks on him. Luckily, they're usually just on him when I find them. But it does always scare me to start seeing them for the first time every season. So what about increased socialization? Like, we usually think about, you know, dogs picking up ticks from wild animals, they're playing in the grass or whatever. But what about like at a dog park? Do you feel like that increases the risk of vector-borne disease too?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't know that we necessarily have data to say that. There's actually some data out there showing that if a flea or a tick is on a suitable host that it's happy on, it's not going to jump ship. They don't have a good reason to. But those can be places where, you know, a few ticks could get slept off, or, you know, wildlife can go through the dog park too overnight when the dogs aren't there running around. And so they can be locations where these infestations can be picked up. And then, you know, it gets carried back home, and that's when you realize, oh, there's a tick on my dog, or, you know, oh, a few weeks later, there's a few fleas, and wondering where those really came from. So the environment, whether that's a dog park or a trail or your friend's house, right? Like it could potentially be anywhere because of the wildlife factor to so many of these ectoparasites starting those infestations. But yeah, the dog park is a risk potentially for internal parasites. Several of those studies have been done showing that there are, you know, roundworm, whipworm, hookworm eggs in the feces of these dogs visiting the dog parks. And so it's important to be cognizant that if it's not ectos, there could be other parasite risks going on from that increased socialization too. And that's why it's so important for everyone to be mindful of, you know, paying attention to their own pets, parasite prevention, and everyone being good stewards of feces when we're out and about and that sort of thing.
I like that, good stewards of feces. Yeah, I think we should all get those. Like if you pick, if somebody sees you picking up your dog poop on a trail where no one would know if you didn't, then you should get a t-shirt. Good poop steward. So yeah, that's good advice. I mean, definitely. And we'll get more to talking about parasite prevention here in a moment. But I did want to just ask, you know, ticks get all the press for spreading disease, right? And especially where I am, we are nuts about tick control, but we sometimes think of fleas as just kind of like a gross nuisance. But what kind of vector-borne diseases should we be keeping front of mind when it comes to fleas?
Yeah, well, and part of that's geographical, right? So the plague, the bubonic plague that decimated, you know, like centuries ago populations, it's still a current risk. And it's not even just a foreign risk. The Desert Southwest, the Four Corners region, there are plague cases annually in pets and people. So fleas are the problem there, right? Like it's some wildlife reservoir harboring the bacteria, but the fleas are going to pass it between susceptible hosts. And then there's the flea tapeworm, which we see no shortage of in veterinary practice, probably the most common tapeworm diagnosed. There's a filarid that can confuse the diagnosis of heartworm. And I actually thought this thing was almost near extinction, to be honest with you. But in the past month or two, and again, we're a reference lab that does a lot of heartworm testing when it's complicated, so we're probably biased in seeing more of these, but we've seen several cases of acanthochylonema recondinum in blood samples from dogs. So it's, yeah, fleas are gross and they cause allergy and maybe anemia, but they do transmit things too. And some of them are very, very common, like the tapeworm.
I would just like to comment on how amazing it is that you guys have names like that, just like at the tip of your tongue. Like, that was really, that's one special skill of parasitologists that I really envy. That was really good.
Well, you're talking about chemotherapeutics and you're going to stump me.
So yeah, I mean, that's a great point is like, yeah, here in Pennsylvania, we don't think about the plague, but you know, fleas are not good. And they're more than just gross. So that is important to keep in mind, but also they are also gross.
To me, like I would take a tick any day over a flea or, and I think it's because ticks can't jump. Like, I think it's the fact that fleas can like jump on you and attack you like that that makes them more gross to me. I know it's insane. Like that I have a hierarchy of grossness when it comes to these things.
This podcast is brought to you by Merck Animal Health, the makers of Bravecto Flea and Tick Protection. Merck Animal Health is excited to now offer Bravecto 1 month Fluralaner chews for your puppy patients. Once puppies reach 6 months of age, they can transition to extended duration Bravecto Fluralaner chews for 12 weeks of powerful protection, nearly three times longer than any other chew. Bravecto for dogs, or Bravecto chews, kills fleas, prevents flea infestations, and kills ticks, black-legged tick, American dog tick, and brown dog tick for 12 weeks. Bravecto also kills Lone Star ticks for 8 weeks. Start and stay with Bravecto. Talk to your Merck Animal Health sales representative about Bravecto today. Bravecto 1 month chews is for dogs 8 weeks of age and older. Side effects may include itching, diarrhea, vomiting, decreased appetite, elevated ALT, lethargy, and weight loss. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Bravecto Chews for Dogs is for dogs 6 months of age or older and is safe for pregnant, breeding, and lactating dogs. Side effects may include vomiting, decreased appetite, diarrhea, lethargy, excessive thirst, and flatulence. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. So I want to talk life stages for a second, and I just want to make sure that everyone knows I'm talking about life stages of dogs, not life stages of parasites. We don't have to have like relive the whole like parasite life cycle experience that we all had multiple times that we had to memorize. It's not that.
Yeah, don't log out of the
Yeah,
podcast.
don't hang up. But I want to talk about dog life stages because I feel like we see a lot of puppies very frequently early in life, and so they tend to be pretty well protected because they're coming in to see us every month for their boosters, and they're getting prevention every time they're in, and then they get spayed and neutered and maybe get some then. But they're growing, and we can't send home enough usually to last them until they're due to come in for another visit. So they have this big gap where we don't see them, and a lot of them will slip through the cracks there because, pet owners mean well, but we all know good intentions do not equal compliance. So,
God, I wish,
for
right?
right, for ourselves too, right? So do you agree? Is this a pattern you see? And what do you feel like we could do differently to try to avoid that?
I think it's great that we get our hands on these animals and get the clients in the room so often early on so that we can start, setting these expectations and, instilling this kind of regimen and habit formation of how important it is to make sure that we are keeping on top of these issues such as parasites for this animal going forward. But as you mentioned, there's that, innate gap that comes in and what do you do about it? Do you, make sure your front office staff are sending them monthly reminders? Do you actually like take their cell phone from home while you're there in the hospital and pre-program reminders for them? I know some people have done that before too. And that's how I actually like have mine set up, right? I have a reminder on my phone because if I don't have my phone on me, I'm like practically naked, even though that's not the truth. Many of us feel that way if we don't.
And everybody listen, like the parasitologist puts reminders on her phone to give her preventatives to her pets. So it is okay if we need that little bit of assistance.
Absolutely. I have an almost 1-year-old at home right now, and I'm surprised I even have my head on straight some days. So everyone has whatever situation it happens to be for their life that makes it difficult to remember these things. But these things are so important and they're so worth remembering. And anything we can do on our end at the practice to try to help that client out and help them be compliant. So whether that's making sure that reminder is set up, whatever reminder system would work best for that client, or, we do have some product options that lend themselves to increasing compliance. And so we've got longer acting options available out there. So, the monthlies are great if they can be given monthly, and that works for some people, and that may not work for other people. So anything we can do to get more product on board for longer will ultimately help, prevent more parasites. Because if it's something that's never in the system of the dog or the cat, it can't do its job, right? And maybe those things can help us out.
Yeah, for sure. And I think too, there's a lifestyle factor that comes in for these young pets, right? Because people think young pets are super healthy and they're not going to have any problems, but they're also, when they're young and they're out and about and they're taking their dogs everywhere and they're meeting other dogs and going to parks and stuff, I mean, they're exposed to so much stuff. So it seems like it would be extra important to protect them during that time. So, do you have tips for driving the importance of that message home for pet owners that it's still really important, even though your pet is young and healthy?
Yeah, they may seem young and healthy. And the truth of the matter is they probably have some sort of parasite issue going on that maybe we, don't know about. Because a lot of puppies in particular are born with parasites. They get them from their mother. So it's just they're out there. And, the good thing is these young, healthy immune systems can deal with a lot once, the first few weeks are going to be, hit or miss, right? We need to help them out as much as we can when they're super young. But as they start getting on a good plan of nutrition, they've got their vaccines in and stuff, they are going to be those apparently healthy, let's go out and enjoy the world, pets. But the world has a lot of things that it's throwing at them in relation to parasites and other infectious diseases and whatnot. So we do need to just remind the clients how truly important it is that we call these things preventives for a reason. We don't want to, turn around and have to call them treatments after the fact, after a problem has already been started, because sometimes you may not be able to 100% reverse whatever, came from that. Say the animal, gets a tick on them and we think, oh, a tick, gross. But what if that tick was harboring the Lyme pathogen and that gets in this dog's system and maybe this dog gets treated, but we know they're refractory cases, and maybe this dog ends up with kidney issues or lameness down the road from what was truly something that was preventable early on. And so we just need to remind them how truly important it is. And I know this is going to sound super corny, Katie, but like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And I know we all hated it when our parents would like say that to us, but it's it's really true. Now that like I'm a parent, right? I'm sure I'll say that to my son, but like, you know, these preventives are so safe. They're so effective if they're given compliantly that we really, hopefully as a profession, don't have to be dealing with treating as many tick-borne infections in the future, or treating heartworm, or treating such and such internal parasite or whatnot, right? Because we do have the means to prevent them if the products are given.
Yeah, I love that kind of empowering view of it, that like pet owners and veterinary team members were sort of part of this charge that can actually change the face of, you know, what we're seeing in practice, because we have the tools and now we have to feel empowered to use them. And like, we're doing our part to sort of reduce the number of those cases that we see. I like that way to look at it. You know, kind of makes pet owners too feel a little bit kind of like a superhero for doing it too.
Yeah. And I think we need to like praise them. We don't do a great job when we're running our diagnostics at wellness visits, right? Like, yeah, it's negative for everything. And then now if we, you know, come back in the room and say, well, you know, there was nothing there, and we just kind of leave it at that, the owner may get this feeling of, oh, well, this, I spent how much money on this test that told me nothing. No, that test told us that whatever you're doing is working. You know, praise them for, if you know they've been buying whatever parasite prevention products that you've been prescribing for them, like, congratulations, great job. What you've been doing, your lifestyle management, your parasite prevention tactics, they've been working. We're not seeing any evidence of such and such and such. If they're not compliant and you know that, maybe you circle around and you're like, hey, we don't have any evidence this year. Let's,
got lucky.
You know, yeah, we got lucky. Let's try to fix this so that we don't see issues in the future. Because as you say, you're in Pennsylvania. How many Lyme positive dogs walk in those practices every day, right? Yeah, you know it's a problem, and you know if you give it enough time, it'll be a problem for pretty much every pet out there. Yeah. So we really do need to, you know, congratulate them on doing the things well that they are doing well, but at the same time reminding them that it's so important that if we're not doing this, or, you know, we need to do a little bit better at this, let's work as a team to figure out the best strategy, because we care about your pet like you care about your pet. Right. And we're all just in it for the benefit of that pet. And so if we can get everyone's minds on that mentality of that, we're all trying to come at this together, right, for the benefit of the pet, I think that can help too.
Yeah, I love that. The team approach, sort of collaborative approach. I love that. And, you know, one thing that I was also thinking about was, like, our practice really encourages that gap where the pets kind of disappear, you know, between like spay neuter and their first adult visit. Like, our pets really should come in more often during that time, because that's why they all come back for their first year visit and they're very scared. And so our practice tries to reduce that fear and stress. And so we're always encouraging pets to come in for happy visits in that gap year. And this would be another really good use of that visit too, right? Is to sort of weigh them, make sure that they have enough prevention, send them home with some if they don't have any. I feel like that would be something that the pet owners could sort of feel empowered to do on multiple levels, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's a perfect opportunity to do that gut check of, hey, did you give this month? Or, hey, you know, we only sent home a month's worth. We need to reevaluate weight and readjust our dosage, right? Yeah. And make sure that that pet's getting the right amount of product for its prevention. So yeah, the happy visits, I think, is a great idea to kind of work in that parasite aspect, that medical aspect to that happy visit too.
Yeah, you had mentioned too, I want to go back to something you said where you had talked about, like, there are monthly preventions, preventative options, and then there's longer acting ones. And I feel like a lot of times in the puppies, we're shying away from those longer acting ones because the puppies are growing so fast, but then we have to shift them into a longer acting product if we want them to have it. And I feel like a lot of times we sort of balk at switching, because we don't want to confuse the owners with multiple products, and the owners don't necessarily understand that it's like the same concept, just lasting longer. But why is it important to not let things lapse, like even for a few weeks while we try to figure out what the plan is?
Yeah, I mean, a few weeks might be long enough for a tick to attach and transmit a pathogen and be gone, right? That's more than enough time. And I think that time point, that critical time point you mentioned, like 6 months, is an important time point in their life, because that's probably when their kind of routine visits for vaccinations and getting started are going to end. But yeah, we can evaluate what their growth trends have been up until this point and figure out if a longer acting product. So like when we talk about like flea and tick stuff, our only longer acting ones are really the Bravectos, which are 12 week products, or collars, which are, you know, 8 months or 5 months for fleas if there's water involved, that sort of thing. So we don't really have a lot of long acting options, as you mentioned, but we do have some. And if that's going to be a fit for that animal's lifestyle, that client's preference, a lot of clients like to give a treat rather than apply something topically, or they don't want necessarily a collar around their pet's neck. So finding out what's going to work for your client. Are they a treat giver, or would they rather apply something topical? Making sure that animal doesn't have a potential food allergy, right? Like occasionally we'll get those that have either skin reactions to topicals or food allergies to the orals. And so if it's something that's not going to work, either whether that's the owner being uncomfortable giving it or hesitant about giving it, then it's not going to be a compliant product. It doesn't matter like how good the product is. If it's not given, it's not going to work for that family. So we've got to find what's going to fit for them and cover their animal best for the risk that their animal is going to see. So we do have some really broad spectrum options out there. Now, if you can use those longer acting products to the benefit of that client and that patient, that's definitely something to look at.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You know, like the best possible product on the market isn't going to do any good if the client still has 8 months worth a year later.
Exactly.
But, you know, I just wonder, like, because we do have a fair number of clients at our practice that buy 12 doses at a time, you know, and that's great. Or they buy 12 months worth at a time. And that's great. But even if they buy more the next year, you're not really sure when that stuff is going on or in the pet, right? I mean, they can be the best pet owners ever. And if they don't set that alarm on that phone, you know, I, on the 9th of the month is usually when I remember to give my prevention.
Yeah. So, we're good.
So I feel like, you know, if I don't set that alarm, I'm going to be late, you know, and being tardy is not being compliant. So, you know, are there other reasons why it would be important to give continuous coverage besides just making it easier for pet owners to keep track? Like, does that offer medical benefits to give preventives that last longer than 1 month?
So with some of our parasites, like some of these longer acting products can actually break a life cycle, right?
Yeah.
So especially if it's a life cycle that, you know, is kind of in and around your pet. So like fleas, for example, right? If you've got a product that's on board for sequential months, that any of those stages that are going to emerge, we know that pet's still treated, right? Because it was treated a while ago with a really long acting product. And so any adults are going to feed and die, and eventually you're going to exhaust all those flea life stages in the environment. So some of those things can truly like break life cycles like that. Whereas if you're relying on a monthly, you know, that client does have to remember to give it that subsequent month and the subsequent month and the subsequent month to make sure that we're truly breaking those life cycles. Because as you said, if there is a lapse, which in our clients' minds, a few days or maybe even a few weeks may not be that crucial, right? Especially when they're thinking about fleas and ticks, and if they don't see one on the pet, whether or not they're looking, right?
Right.
If they're looking and they don't see one, or if they're not looking and they feel like they don't see one, you know, it's kind of, you know, back of mind, not a big deal. I'll wait and get the product when I see a problem. And again, that's not prevention at all, right?
Right.
That's reactive. That's treatment. So, you know, I've talked to so many people who say, oh yeah, I got 12 months worth and I gave it, you know, the 1st of February, but then I gave it the 31st of March because that's still monthly in some people's minds. But yeah, that's not medically doing its job or able to do its job when you've got a lapse like that. So I think just it's all about that education. And I know that you said at the beginning of this, we spend hours talking about parasites probably over the course of a day.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's truly what it kind of takes. And it can, you know, you can divvy this out to different members of the team, right? And it doesn't have to be necessarily the same person always having this aspect of the conversation, but making sure the clients understand if they're on a product that's intended to be given monthly, that means every 30 days. It doesn't mean, you know, the beginning of this month and the end of the next month, right?
Yeah. That's a super good point. I mean, we definitely feel like as long as we're encased in that, it's called March, then we gave our March dose. But yeah, that's a really good point. And I don't think we make that very clear to clients all the time. So
get confused about, you know, they're learning about nutrition and they're learning about, I don't know, specific joint issues that may afflict their breed down. You know, like there's so much that goes on in those early visits. So anything we can do to make it easier for them, whether that's in our product selection or the way we set up reminders for them or doing these happy wellness visits, and maybe we just give it for them, right? We're like, we're going to auto schedule you to come back on these days. Right?
Yeah.
A reminder. And we're going to give the products that need to be given at this point in time. I mean, maybe we can even do that to help some of them out. But ultimately, unfortunately, a lot of these things, the compliance does rest in the hand of the pet owner. And we've just got to be able to stress to them how important it truly is.
Yeah. And I think that's a perfect way, you know, as we get towards wrapping it up here, you had mentioned just a minute ago, you know, you said it doesn't have to be the same team member always talking about this, because we get sort of flea and tick fatigue. Like, we just really don't want to talk about it again.
I don't understand what you mean, Katie. Like, how can anyone get tired of talking about
this stuff? And so, you know, I feel like sometimes we just get a little less emphatic, especially if we're getting really tired or we've had like 12 wellness appointments in a row or something, you know, and we're just like, we feel like we've just been saying the same thing over and over, but it is just as important for that 12th patient as it was for the first patient. So, you know, our listeners are probably learning, I have a really soft spot for things, all things to do with communication and team education, working well as a team. So for what we call our Keep It Brief segment, can you talk about maybe your top tips for getting the whole team on board with communicating the same message consistently to clients and keeping that enthusiasm up?
That is a toughie, right? And maybe there's even a gap amongst our team's feelings about these things, right? Like if they're not on board personally, if they don't believe it, then they're never going to be able to communicate that to someone else. And so I think we first need to start with our own team and making sure that we all can communicate that same message emphatically. And if not, we need to figure out those points that are being problematic and fix those, right? Because I think most all of us can agree, like, year-round parasite prevention is incredibly important. And yes, there may be cold months here or there. Yes, the risk may be incredibly low at these certain times. But if we get out of that habit, then that's going to become a bad habit for the pet owner, right? And so we need to make sure that the team who's communicating this to the pet owners is all on the same page. And then for making it fun, I mean, it's fun for me to talk about ticks, right?
Could we just have you come in and talk to us?
Yeah.
Because then it would be fun.
Like, let me just clone myself and be everywhere and I'll just do this all day, every day. But I do get the fatigue aspect of it. And I don't know, maybe some internal competitions with your team about communicating, right? Like if you have some, like, oh, Sarah gave 5 different flea life cycle talks today, like, and all 5 clients left with something, right? Like, you need some way to measure the outcome of that communication event. Cause sometimes, like, I'm a super competitive person, so that might work to drive me, but I know that's not for everyone. But just when we can all get a win out of it. And I think for us, the win is knowing that that client's going to go home and protect that pet, or that we've protected that pet before they left today. I think that's our innate win in all of this. That's going to make it more fun and more gratifying. And so the more effectively we can communicate the importance, whether that's using local data, using a story about your own pet. I step on my own toes all the time. I had a cat with flea allergy because I didn't have him on a product. And I had a dog that acquired Ehrlichia because he was on a tick control program, but apparently I needed to do better, right? Like, there was a gap in my coverage. And so I'll step on my own toes all the time. And if we can relate to our clients, maybe from that angle, that, you know, it may make it seem like we're not just trying to sell them something, right? Like, these things happen to the best of us and we have tools. We just need to learn to use the tools to prevent them.
Yeah, that's so important, just relating to clients on a one-on-one level, because, like, we are all clients too, and have all the same tendencies, I feel like, as even some of our best clients just don't, you know, nobody's perfect. But I love that idea of sort of competition, but with the prize being that we've done our jobs really well and not just like who sold the most as in terms of money today, because I feel like we all sort of inherently shrink away from that because it feels too salesy. But the fact is that if we sell a dose of prevention, we've protected that pet. And a dose of extended duration product protects that pet for multiple months at a time, which is even better. You know, that's where product selection does come in. But I love that idea of just like, we're sort of this empowered team, like we were talking about earlier with a client, like superhero team that can stop these parasites. And hopefully we'll just start to see fewer and fewer of them.
Yeah. And maybe like if it's a family coming in for this visit, maybe we rope the kid in with that whole superhero thing you just brought up, right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe we have some like little masks and capes and you're like, I don't know, I didn't think of a superhero name before this call, but y'all are smarter than me.
Yeah.
So like just come up with something and like maybe the kid can be in charge because they remember the most random things, right? Like
yeah.
they'll forget. Please don't rely solely on that. My alarm clock for this. But you know, they might be like, hey, we need to give Brutus his thing this month. You know, have we done this? I want to put my cape on today, you know, to show that we did it. Like that can be something that might work for some families. Who knows?
Yeah, that's
It's always
true.
Something different.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. Well, those are fantastic ideas. And this has been such a fun conversation about fleas and ticks. Like, who knew, right? Well, you knew, yeah. but
we
do
could literally go on for hours.
Yeah, we could. And I do feel like it's important to make this fun because even though these are serious things we're talking about, this is something this is our bread and butter as general practitioners. So, yeah. You know, those of us in general practice, whether we're techs or CSRs or vets, like this affects all of us so much. So this is all really important, and I really appreciate you taking the time today to chat with us. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, this is great. Thank you so much for inviting me.
We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Merck Animal Health, makers of Bravecto, and thanks to all of you for listening. We hope you enjoyed talking bugs with us. Catch you next time. Thanks again to our sponsor and to today's guest for joining us, and thanks to you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, please make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review. We would appreciate if you leave us all of the stars. You can also listen to podcasts on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcasts. And you can drop us a line at podcasts@briefmedia.com. Clinicians Brief Partner Podcasts is a Brief Media production.